I hope I'm the only person, but I knew the day I got married, the first time, I'm like, I should not be walking down this aisle.
That moment.
I knew it.
Hi, I'm Irene Yanku, and this is my podcast. I have spent my entire career in dentistry learning about new technology, techniques to better my clinical skills, and now I'm a practice owner and leader. In life, as a learner, I've noticed my truest love for learning has not been about teeth or what material is best to use for a core buildup. It's been learning about people in our dental community. The educators, scientists, clinicians, business owners, and advocates, their stories, their lives, their why, and their what's next. Getting to know them as humans, identifying how they work, what their rituals are, while highlighting them as the true trailblazers in dentistry. And that's what I do here on the show. So hold on to your suction. It's about to get slippery here on the Tooth or Dare podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Tooth or Dare podcast live on the show floor at SmileCon.
Very smiley.
So this episode is probably going to get cross-promoted to ADA and also to my podcast. And
I'll share it.
Dr. David Rice in the house. Oh, come on. Can I get a woo?
Like a golf clap.
Ah, this is exciting.
Love it.
Okay, so fun fact, David and I have known each other for a very long time. We've sat on a variety of different panels together, which you've moderated. You asked me a lot of questions, but yes. I've never asked you any questions.
I'm on the hot seat today.
And you recently released a book.
I did.
I read your book.
I'm a little
for
nervous.
Those of you that are looking, there, I have a lot of notes on this book. But let's start at the beginning of the book, a little bit before the writing of the book.
Okay.
There's a few sections here where you allude to your personal life, and then you skip over a lot of it to get to the meat of the book, which there are three main principles: identifying your what, your why, and your who. And these are three things that David has figured out over the course of his career in order to figure out and identify who these people are, in what location should you be, and then what makes you happy in dentistry. And maybe it's not dentistry at all.
Could be.
So at the beginning of your book, you mentioned that you had kind of like a life-changing experience that led you to identifying some of these principles. What can you tell us about that? What was that?
So the whole like Mark story?
Yeah.
So Mark at the time was an associate in my practice, great young guy, late 20s, his wife's 27. And we've all kind of had that moment where life starts to change. New house, like new car, new baby comes along. And 1 week to the day, unfortunately, Mark's wife, Kathy, dies. 27.
New grad.
Insane. Yeah. Insane. And the whole day, like I didn't dive into the whole story, but it's like the freakiest Saturday ever. And really the impetus to sit back and assess life and say, like, who do I really want to be when I grow up? Because maybe this isn't everything that I'm looking for.
So you would, like, put all of your eggs in the Mark basket, basically, because you brought him on as your first associate. And you were, like, you talked about mentoring him. Like, you were mentoring him to perhaps take over more time, more patience, more responsibility.
Yeah.
And in the end, when this happened, it was the opposite. So you said something about, like, I had to figure out a way to work as hard as I could so that I could actually pay Mark to stay home. How do you do that? How do you, like, work twice as hard and then cut your associate a check to say, hey, don't worry, like, your bills will get paid. I got you.
So I would say practically, I taught part-time at Buffalo's Dental School. I'd done that for 11 years. I loved it. And I went to my chairman and said, hey, I need sabbatical.
Yeah.
Everybody, I mean, Buffalo's a small town. So everybody knew Mark, a good guy. And my chairman said, can't give it to you. It's mid-semester. So I literally just took my keys out of my pocket, put them on his desk and quit. Said, okay, some things are more important. Had a team meeting. There were you know, 10 of us in the practice at the time and just told everybody, hey, I'm going to pay you to be here as much as need to be, but I'm going to work 6 days a week and we're going to pay Mark to stay home as long as it takes.
Hmm.
And so practically that's how we did it. How did I do it emotionally? I only did it because there were 9 other people in that building Wow. who were all in on helping somebody who really needed help.
Yeah. It's interesting how like in tragedy like that, people come together.
Yeah.
There were a lot of parts of your book that I am going through now. As so for those that don't know, I'm a restorative dental hygienist, which means that I can do restorative work as well as dental hygiene. And I own my own dental practice. So I have team members who respond to me. So I opened my office in 2020, just as the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
So all of the like beautiful, cute scrubs that we were going to wear got covered by N95s and gowns and face shields. All of the principles that I thought I was going into dentistry with from all of the offices that I worked in before, those were all wiped away. And they have all of these new systems that have to happen. So all of these like little pieces of your book of you identifying like, is this location the best place for me to be? Do I even want to live in this city? Do I want to live in this country? Who are the people that are going to get me to whatever the vision is of my career? I feel like I'm living through some of them now, and I'm using your book as kind of a roadmap of what not to do. I don't know how to like better describe it, but there's like certain things in there where I even question like some of the relationships that I am in with friends, colleagues, who do I want to be surrounded with in order to have that circle be a circle of people that I trust instead of people that perhaps are just in it for the wrong reasons. So it really had me looking at my team members too. And a few months ago, we lost an employee. She committed suicide. Oh. And that's not in a textbook anywhere.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no roadmap. There's no textbook. There's no PDF that, you know, a teacher shares with you to what you do as an employer when something like that happens on a Saturday morning while you're in New Orleans with your family. So in tragedy, just like what happened with you,
yeah,
I found that the core people that were in our practice came together.
Yeah.
And I saw people helping each other out that had never run Steri before or had never like flipped the sterilizer, like just honest human beings wanting to help one another. And two that were different. And those two were two that ended up not working out in our office.
Yeah.
You talked about hiring the right people in your practice. And you said something about how you can spot, obviously, somebody that is not going to be a good fit in your practice and also in your personal life. How can you, what are those like red flags right away that you see?
Yeah, I think, you know, first, I think when we just don't, we either inherently get along or we inherently don't get along, it's a clash of core values.
Yeah.
And you have beliefs and I have beliefs and sometimes they align and that's great. And sometimes they don't align. But when you meet somebody for the first time and it takes you about 15 seconds to realize like there's something off. I don't know what it is. I can't figure it out. But trust that. And then, you know, verify that over time. Figure out like, okay, was my like snapshot true or is my snapshot off? Because sometimes we get fooled. But I think a lot of times we know who the good people in our lives are, and we know who the people who aren't going to help us are. It's just a matter of being honest with ourselves and maybe making hard choices and inviting them to go play in somebody else's world other than our own.
Yeah. Do you find that at one point you became a little desensitized with hiring and firing people because you have to do it so sometimes frequently? Like, we want all of the people in our office to be with us forever. The goal is to have like everyone's been there for 15 years or more, but how do you maintain being a boss? How do you maintain being a leader, which leads by example? Having empathy, being radically candid, but not losing your humanity all at the same time.
I cry a lot.
In the shower?
On the inside. In the shower, in the car, all the places. Yeah. But
do you really?
No.
No? I do.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't.
I'm still in the crying years. A former
I have moments.
Boss of mine said that for the first 5 years of owning a practice, she cried a lot.
Okay.
And then after 5 years, it was like there wasn't something that she hadn't seen.
I will tell you, so it wasn't a lot of crying for me, but so picture like the backstory behind Mark really was that part of our relationship. But I hired Mark the first week I owned the practice.
Oh, no way.
So I had this goal and I had this vision of like, we're going to grow. And I can't grow by myself. I'm going to need another dentist. And at some point, we're going to have to just dive into the deep end of the pool. So hired Mark right away. So the short story is Mark and I had each other. That's easier, right? It's way easier for us to go. And there were plenty of days where we'd go and close the door and be like, so are we going to pay ourselves this week? Or are we going to pay all the bills and everybody else and go out there and pretend that everything is right in the world when you and I both know it's not?
Yeah.
And we had, so we had a lot of those moments where we could rely on each other. The humanity side of it all, I think for me, what I've learned over the years is like, to be strong enough to say, this is where we're going in this direction. And I want all of you to come with us. But this is the way we're going. So if that's not the right direction for you, it's okay. It's just not okay for you to be here. We can be friends. We can't be teammates. And then to have the strength to say that, and then the bigger strength piece is following through on it. When people say they're going to go there with you, but they don't go there with you, to sit back and talk about from an accountability standpoint, like, hey, you promised to be this person and you're not being that person. So you either need to be that person or you need to move on. And I'm okay with both.
Ugh, those are like the most challenging conversations
for me.
I can't. And it's like all of the other things come into play, like their families, their kids, like their responsibilities. So like I feel deeply the paycheck sentiment because as a startup, there are many months where you go without collecting a paycheck.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you like put on a happy face.
Yep.
And you show up and you're the cheerleader.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. So practice made 100 grand last month. Overheads at 62% because thank you, COVID. Fixed costs are the same. And then you've got this small, like, I don't know, 7% margin of, are we going to leave it in the bank for a rainy day or are we going to take it out and pay our cell phone bills? But that's on the employer side. Employees don't see that at all.
No.
And I don't know if that's just a me thing. I feel like there was no transparency in the previous offices that I worked in for 17 years. No employer of mine ever sat down and said, hey, these are the struggles that we have. And then like shit breaks and that irritates me because we knew that the scanner was not supposed to do this. And we knew that the sensor was supposed to be put back away. And it's like something falls and breaks and then immediately it's like a $5,000 bill.
Yeah.
You somehow have to find the money for like I bought an airflow machine and then I bought another one because my other hygienist wanted one. And the thing just keeps getting clogged because they're not like doing the thing with the powder. But every time I send that machine back, they hit you with a bill, but it's this magic money that comes from the tree that is hurtful. How do you plan for that? Like you said something in your book that you're not an organized guy, but somehow it was right at the beginning, like chapter 14 that said, it might surprise you, but I hate being organized. I don't always like the details of life. I'm inherently a big picture guy, throw paint at the wall, large vision kind of guy. How do you be a large vision kind of guy with lacking organizational skills? Tell me how.
How do you do it? You build a team around you. So the most important person on my team originally had to be someone who was highly organized, who loved being organized, who like got off, like literally putting the check mark on the box. That's their favorite thing to do. And then my job was, her name's Lori. My job was to sit with Lori every week for like 15 minutes and just say, hey, Lori.
Where are we?
Yeah. Tell me all the stuff.
Yeah.
And what do you need from me to help you stay organized? And I'll be your cheerleader. But if you ask me to check all the boxes, they're not getting checked.
No.
I know that about myself. And like no one would know that, right? Because you like I run around like a circus monkey at all of these shows and speak and do all this stuff. And people are like, oh, you got to be highly organized. You just need people to help you.
How has your definition of success changed? Because you mentioned success a lot throughout the book. You mentioned it at the beginning that you thought success was owning a practice, X amount of money in the bank, but the personal side of it did not have a definition of success. And by the end of the book, success is on like three different fronts. So what was your original definition of it, and how do you define it now?
My original definition is I simply wanted to be the greatest clinical dentist on the planet. Like, you could, there could be equally good
How's that
people.
Going out for you?
It's not bad. There can be people who are as good, but I never wanted there to be somebody who was better. I was going to take all the CE. I was going to learn all the lessons, take all the time, do all the right stuff. I still love that when I do practice, but my practice time is this big and then the rest of the time is this big. I would tell you today, and this is props to Anastasia, success today's joy.
Mm.
Success today's waking up every day happy.
Anastasia's your wife.
My wife, yeah. Okay. Yeah, better 9/10s for sure.
Later. In the book?
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the book, were you married before?
I was married. Okay. Then I was...
That's the part of the story.
Yeah, we had to leave all that stuff
you
out.
Stopped. I mean, you're like, life changed.
If you want a soap opera book.
My wife. Yeah. So tell us the move part and then the meeting of Anastasia.
Yeah.
Who you speak of so highly and so lovingly that I'm like, damn. No one's ever said that about me.
Yes, they have. They just, you know,
behind my back.
Sometimes we don't say it enough out loud.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, when you're not around, people say they're saying those things all the time. And guys, I'm going to put it on our shoulders. We're not good at that. We need to be better at that.
Look at all of the gentlemen.
But so silver lining of being married and then getting divorced is you learn something.
What'd you learn? Top three lessons.
So none of you would believe this. I'm an introvert at my core.
Yeah, I believe it.
So in my first marriage, I never spoke up and spoke out. I buried things. And you've all done this in your life, either at work or at home, until one day it boiled over and I couldn't do it one more day. So shame on me, right? That was not my first wife's fault. That's on me for harboring it until I couldn't do it one more day. But that was my number one learn. A second learn was... this game of life is really short, and truly with Mark's experience, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I was going to live all out every day. And with one goal is just not run out of money. Right. So if I live to 80, 85, they don't have to like tuck me in a corner, but otherwise I'm going to just go at it 100% and not be afraid of anything. Zero fear.
Yeah.
I learned, I was part of being an introvert, I think, is maybe sometimes for me, I was scared to fail, to let people know that people would figure out maybe I wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't. And then the third lesson was we're all human, and I needed to get right with me, and then zero fear. If you like me, great. If you don't like me, I don't much care. I don't.
What's the quote? Other people's opinion of me is none of my business. I really like that.
I like it too. But if I'm being honest, I still struggle with that.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Still struggle with it.
Especially with the like social media stuff and the comments and the
all the nice things everybody say to you when you take a stance.
Right.
Yeah. I hear you.
Back to the money thing. So you said you wanted to do all of these things without running out of money. I found this principle in your book quite fascinating about having three different buckets. Like a physical bucket. And I remember when I was trying to save money when I was in dental hygiene school, I had like a little envelope and I would put the cash in the slots of all of the things that I needed to spend on my bills, my car, whatever fun money I had.
So
you kind of taken that and adultified it a little bit where you have identified that there's three different buckets of energy, basically, of what you need to do with your time. What page is that on? I remember, like, it was literally at the front of the book.
It's early on.
But you have this beautiful description. Here we go. So you've got bucket number one, which is personal time. Bucket number two, which is learning time. And then bucket number three is working time. And the way that you describe this is that you need to figure out what the cost of your personal time is, what the cost of your learning is, like your CE, and then work backwards based on how much money do I need to survive in order to fill these buckets.
100%.
So you work backwards. You work from the big picture to like the minute, not the other way around.
Yeah. So that's where, for me, being a big picture guy, like this worked really, it gave me some organization, but I look at it and say like, yeah, how much money do I need to have for Anastasia not have the life we want? X. Great. Let's plan our life first, and then let's figure out how we get better at our jobs second. And third is, let's plug in all the days we need to work to generate that money to pay for the learning to get better, and then to pay for fun and the lifestyle that we want.
How does a financial planner feel about that? Because it's very like living lean. I mean, and I don't know what that lifestyle looks like, but if you're working to have enough for these things, it doesn't necessarily leave a lot for your freedom number or your legacy number or whatever that, whatever your financial planner is going to say. Hey, David, you actually have to increase that by 2x because we need this small margin of like the what if money.
True.
How did the bankers feel about this philosophy?
The good news is I think my parents drilled into me, like I'm still kind of a saver at heart. So that's in me.
Mm-hmm.
So that money's built into how much money do I need to generate?
Yeah.
And probably Anastasia and I have traditionally put away more money than most people would think they need.
Oh, okay.
Because I do fear that rainy day.
Yeah.
I love what we like. I mean, do you love what you do?
Yeah.
I love what we do.
Doesn't always make us any money.
No. Yeah. And sometimes like.
Yeah.
At some point in time, this is going to get. We're not going to love it much as we love it today. So we got planned for that day. But I was really blessed with an amazing accountant early on. And Russ was a guy who just said, give me this and then go do whatever you want to do with the rest of your stuff. And he worked hand in hand with our financial planner and, you know, people I knew before Anastasia. So it's all worked out okay.
You said that when you're creating your who people. So your what? Can you define those three things? So define the what, the where, and the who.
Yeah.
Of like what? What do I need to figure out and how do I figure those out?
So Simon Sinek fans would all say start with why. And I love Simon for stealing that from 10 other people. But I love why. But to me, why is important. But where was really more important for me. I knew as a young dentist, I knew as a young guy, I shouldn't be living in Buffalo, New York, but I did it. I had family there. I thought that was the definition of being a good son, being a good brother, being a good friend. And I knew when I was like 22, that was the stupidest thing in the whole world. So for me, start with where. Where are you going to wake up every day and love it? For us, it was water. So that was the cool thing with Anastasia. We're like, we need to get to, you know, someplace, get on the coast and live by water. So every day now we look at it, it's awesome. So figure that out for yourself where you're going to wake up happy every day. You can be a dental professional anywhere in the world and be like crazy successful. So you might as well do it where you're going to wake up happy every day. You know, the supply and demand thing is kind of true, but it's also a bit of a myth because there's enough people out there who don't do it at a high level that who cares. And then who for me is who literally takes me from where I'm sitting right now and advances me along my vision. And that could be joy, like who makes my life joyful? Yay. Who helps build the business side? Yay. And we have fun doing it. And then who is everybody else who gets in the way? And if you're anyone else who gets in the way, I need to limit the amount of time I spend with you, or it's going to take me too long to get what I want out of life. You know, Anastasia and I. And then, you know, the what is just the action that we do all day, every day. Let's, you know, that's the teeth business for most.
In that same like section, you talked about your family and the sacrifices that your parents made.
Yeah.
Like my family's same. Water is my thing. So I'm a water. And then the family part, my parents like were refugees from Romania. I was born in a third world country. And the story that you share about your parents and like them working a couple of jobs and like working late hours and sacrificing all of this stuff for you really spoke to me that, we don't always see our parents for who they are until later in life. So like I'm 38 and I idolize my parents now more so than I did when I was in my 20s because I didn't understand how hard they work for little to no acknowledgement by the person that they work the hardest for. So I'm like, you know, a 13-year-old brat wanting to play tennis and smashing my tennis racket. And I just see anger and fire and they see hundreds of dollars and extra hours of work. How has your like relationship with your family changed from when you became a dentist? Because it seemed like that decision was kind of just like, okay, let's just do this because you're good at science and maybe you'll make a good living. And how has that relationship now changed in your adult years?
Our relationship is, it's always great.
Complicated.
But so imagine that when I lived in Buffalo, I lived in the same town as my parents.
Yeah.
My sister, my brother-in-law had lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I was the caregiver. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, that was my role. And I think I liked my role. And I know, so talk about family heritage. My mom is Italian. So if you're firstborn Italian son, you get nothing you do is ever wrong. But you're supposed to be the one who like holds everybody together. So I love that. What's changed is when we moved to Florida, we invited my parents to come with us.
Mm-hmm.
But they know we travel and speak and do all these things. So they said, you know, we're going to go to Charlotte too. We'll go live by Jennifer, Jason, kids. And
those are your siblings?
Jennifer, my sibling,
yeah,
brother-in-law, Jason, and then three kids who are now all early 20s.
Got it.
And so picture 7 years ago, they make that shift. And now my mom comes from like people who live to 100 and they're healthy till like the last day. My dad comes from like everything's wrong. So it's hard for me today because I'm not the caregiver. Thank God for my sister. Amazing. But it's, if I'm being truthful, it's difficult to not be there on a regular and help take care of my family.
Yeah.
So that part's a little stressful.
That's, and I don't know if that ever gets easier, right?
I don't think so.
Like my dad had hand surgery yesterday, so I had to like drive him to the hospital and help him fill out his form. He's like a 63-year-old engineer. Like he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
And the nurse is like, are you taking any medications? And he's like, no. I'm like, takes 81 milligrams of aspirin every morning. He has asthma, so he also uses two puffers. He's like, oh yeah, those things.
I forgot about those things.
So it's hard to like, you know, not be there all the time, but also try and live by these like really important principles to be happy.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna say it out loud, my parents sacrificed a ton, but I don't think that they were ever really happy. I think that it was the expectation that we are here, we have a child, we need to provide for this child, we need to do all the right things. But were they actually truly happy? Were they doing their why? Were they in the place that they wanted to be? Were they happy in their relationship with one another?
Yeah.
And now as a 38-year-old, I look back and I'm like, yeah, that sucks. I feel guilt for that as a seemingly adult person.
Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
Same?
Same. So, I mean, picture Anastasia and I meet in our mid-40s, both second marriages, and we both kind of decided on this is who we want to be, which means we prioritize each other first, and then we add in the family layer, and then there's all the work stuff. So you can imagine, you know, you're living a parallel life that we live.
That they don't even understand.
They don't understand.
They don't know what you do.
They don't. Have your parents ever seen you speak?
No.
I brought my parents one time. It was really cool. It was one of the biggest rooms I was in. There's about 1,800 people in the room, and it was. And my mom and dad sat in the front row, like so proud, looking up. And my dad is like, "I had no idea." Still didn't really necessarily understand, but kind of cool to get a glimpse. But short story, my parents lived their life for my sister and I. That's reality. And what they see is, I think, this core values tug of war between Anastasia and I choosing us.
Yeah.
And then they're a part of our family, as opposed to them choosing everybody around them, sacrificing themselves.
Such a different dynamic.
It's a different dynamic.
Sure.
But I think it's an important lesson for parents to teach their kids.
Yeah.
You know, you should live for your significant other.
Yeah.
And then maybe live for your kids. So your kids learn those lessons to say, I get to go out and be happy.
Yeah.
Instead of living for somebody else who turns out to be a jerk 20 years later.
And you never, happens. I feel like I never really learned what like true love was in that model. Because they weren't affectionate. They didn't like hold hands. Like there was no cutesy stuff happening.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen my parents kiss ever. So you don't really learn what that looks like.
True.
I mean, I didn't. But anyways, your book is not about relationships. Although I feel like we need a part two about relationships because that is
the soap opera.
Well, not the soap opera, but the principles that you learn.
Oh, it's true.
that help you advance your business by being happy in your personal life. Yeah. Like, we've all worked for an employer that you can tell something wasn't clicking at home. And they bring that to the office. Vice versa, employees do that as well, too. Right? You bring your stuff and then you take it out on the most vulnerable person. And usually that's the quiet clinician in op two that will take it until they can no longer take it anymore. The first half of your book was very tutorial focused. Like, there was a lot of like, fill this in, say this out loud. And I didn't do it because I was like, I was afraid. At one point you were like, write down your competitors. I'm like, well, what if my competitors get this book? They're going to know that they're my competitors. And then you had this like great section about aligning with your core values. And I realized that the core values, and I kind of like put little dots next to them.
I love that.
I did a lot. I'm the organized one of the
That's
two
impressive.
Of us. So I put like values to them, like out of three, which one was the highest core value? And then I asked my team members the same questions, like what their core values were. So I feel like this book is great for an individual person, but also like to build the cultivate the who in your team. What are your core values? Do you have like three of them that you model every decision that you make every day? You wake up in the morning, your feet hit the ground. Your first decision of the day, are you true to your core values all the time?
All the time, no. I'd be lying if I said that. I think none of us are.
Do you want to look at the list?
I should probably look at the list and get glasses. I will tell. Well,
you can see which ones are high on mine and say them out loud.
There's
so threes are high.
Threes are high. Yeah. Oh, ambition and achievement. I love those.
Yeah.
So creativity is very high for me, and curiosity. I would say that.
So I had a creativity was also a three in curiosity. Yeah.
Excellence. So excellence is one of mine, which is a really good thing, but also probably is an awful thing, right?
Yeah.
Because we keep pushing. And Mark would always, we were close enough. Mark would be like, when will it ever be excellent enough? Will you ever wake up one day and just bask in the moment? I'm like, nah, it's not in me. It's not in me to do it.
Yeah.
Loyalty is one of mine. I'm loyal to a fault, especially on the personal side. I love it. I'm at peace with it. But sometimes when it comes to the business world that is this floor, you know, I can be loyal to a fault where it hurts me. But I've made peace with that because I feel like, you know what, at the end of the days, I'm going to look back and think, did I really care about this group or this person? No, I care more that I lived it the way I wanted to live it, whether they respected it or they didn't respect it. And I'd love to add self-control, but I don't have any of that at all. Zippo.
Really?
No.
Like in what definition? Like how?
So
like self-control, like someone's going to put a piece of chocolate cake in front of you.
I'm knocking that cake out. If I want the cake. So, all right, this is really bad. This is going to sound selfish, but if you put cake there and I want cake, I'm eating cake. I will triple down on the gym time, but I'm gonna eat the cake. We're gonna go out with friends. We're gonna go out.
So you got a sweet tooth.
I've got all those. Yeah.
At the end of the book, you made me make a list of the people in my business circle who need to be there for strategic reasons. The lawyer that I use for HR, the lawyer that I use for contract negotiations, my accountant, all of these like people that I didn't really know that I needed, I listed them all out. How do you identify who else needs to be on that team? And how do you take a hit? Because to assemble a group of people, to assemble a team, to hire employees, you may not have the revenue for it. So let's say you want to build a social media empire and you need a variety of freelancers and a media manager and a brand manager and a creative director. All of those people need a salary. Say they're all making 50 grand a year. If you're not bringing in 150 grand, how do you decide who these people need to be in order for you to have enough work and money to put them on that list?
Sure. I think the first thing for me is to figure out what am I inherently skilled at? So what can I do? And then the second thing is, what can I learn to do? So if I have to be super lean, what am I good at? I'm going to do all of those things. What can I learn? I'll try to do as much of those things as I can possibly do. And then I'll prioritize using Lori as an example, like I'm a terrible organizer. I have to have somebody on my team who can help me structure my days, my weeks, my months, and dot the I's and cross the T's. Like that's my number one person I have to have. I'm going to pay them first. So I'm going to look for my most glaring weakness and get that person on my team number one. And then from there, I'll work back and say, what's next? And then one day, which I know you're experiencing now, like you get to this place where you're like, okay, I have a choice. I can pay a full team of people and maybe not make a lot of money over here.
Yep.
Or I can pay 50% or 75% and make more money. And for me, the coolest part about being having a clinical career was like the first, I don't know, 6 years of Ignite, that was my living. And every penny Ignite DDS brought in, I just reinvested in team and process and process. And then one day I woke up like, oh, we've got a great team. We've got great process. Yay, we finally actually have profit. And that's when I was able to switch gears and say, let me run Ignite. And then I'll go do dentistry for fun and to stay relevant.
Mm.
That didn't happen overnight.
So you decided you wanted to start Ignite because you missed teaching.
Yes.
Same situation. Yeah. I taught clinical dental hygiene, faculty, theory, and clinic. And then during COVID, I left to open my practice. And I knew that I didn't have enough time to spread between practice management, clinical practice, and then teaching. And teaching is like minimum wage. Like, let's be honest, with all of the marking, like I think I was making $37 an hour as a clinical dental hygiene instructor, where my hourly rate working for someone else was like in the high 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
And I got a $1 raise like every 3 years. Like, it was absolutely terrible. So when you open a practice, you're like, chair time is super valuable. Like that hygiene patient, a new patient hygiene appointment at our office, is like $300 or $400 an hour. I can't not do that hygiene appointment. So you decided to figure out a way where you can still teach and not make minimum wage, basically. How did you do that? And how did the startup of Ignite, like what was that concept like?
Yeah. So,
and for those listening at home or watching this on YouTube and that don't know what Ignite DDS is.
Like, sure. So Ignite DDS is a community of predominantly young dentists, dental students, other professionals who kind of, we all work as a team together. We started in Buffalo with six people having lunch. So after I was no longer at the school formally, I guest spoke. People come up to the front, that always happens. I'm like, hey, let's just go grab lunch. So I had intention that day. Normally I would just talk for as long as people want to talk. But that day I'm like, we're not talking. We are by design going to schedule a lunch. And lunch went to dinner for 10 and dinner for 10. 6 months later, I was paying for dinner for 300.
My gosh.
And
expensive dinner.
And so picture, I think this is a good point for everybody who's listening. That lots of people are going to think you're nuts, right? You know, you have those people like, just go be.
Oh, yeah, they tell me.
Like, you're crazy. What are you doing this for? So my family, my friends are like, just go do your dental practice. It's firing on all cylinders. Why aren't you not loving it and just, you know, 9-to-5-ing it? Like, that's not who I want to be. So we grassrooted it and went from Buffalo and just said, all right, there's 300 of us in this room. You all must know five people in another city who would love what we're doing right now. And we built a targeted list.
What were you doing? Like, what were those meetings about?
They were this.
Yeah.
We talked about like the gamut of all things in dentistry. So some of it was leadership. Some of it was, hey, I'm brand new to this. How the heck do I go out there and find a job? Or how do I, what education do I go get? How do I learn to communicate well? I have all these low, like everything. So then once we spread out, then we added the process. We said, okay, we're going to go here with these targeted lessons. So we surveyed the 300. Rank. What do you want to learn about most? Prioritize it. And as they did, when we went from city to city to city, which was, you know, dumb business move, but self-funded for 2 years.
Yeah.
It was like $86,000. And everybody, again, is looking at me like I'm nuts. But at the end of those
Frank
2 years.
Frank Spear did the same thing. He shared that story at his most recent summit that I got to go to.
Yeah.
And it was just that. He booked a hotel and hoped it would fill. And every time he put that down payment on that hotel room with the food and whatever and how many people, it's like 15, 20, 30. And you hope 100 sign up and then you get 80. And you hope 200 sign up and you get 150. Till eventually, somehow, the numbers number.
They start
the
to
math,
work. The math abacus is out.
Yeah. The little beans get
counted. The little beans counted. Yeah. And so same deal. So one day, it was like 2.5 years in, I very naively knocked on Patterson Dental's HQ and said, I have an idea. And I don't know if you've ever met Paul Guggenheim. So Paul used to be their president. Amazing guy. Thank God it was Paul. And he's like, what's the idea? I'm like, well, you took a meeting with me, so I know you've studied how much money I've spent in the last 15 years as a customer. He's like, I have. And very naively, I looked at him and I said, how would
I
you
need
like
it back.
Oh, I'm like, how would you like 10,000 of me? And wow. Paul's like,
I'm listening.
I'm listening. And he took a shot. And that was when everything started to move. Now 54,000 young professionals later, I think it worked because I went for it. I went all in. There's no tiptoeing in life, folks. You can tiptoe all you want, but you're never going to get out of where you are today if you tiptoe. So I went all in. I essentially worked two full-time jobs, right? I worked my dental practice, and then Ignite was this free full-time job that I did for a couple years. 7 years, really. First few years cost me money, and then after that I broke even, and then finally after that it worked out. But I don't know, I looked at it and I thought, I'm like, worst case scenario, it's my ultimate give back to dentistry. And best case scenario, this thing blows up into something great, which I'm thankful the latter happened. And you know, here we are hanging out.
Any advice for people currently rethinking their lives and their why and their who and their, like, I'm sure there are many that are unhappy or dissatisfied or unfulfilled. Perhaps like the fulfillment part in dentistry is difficult. We do the same thing over and over again, expect the same results or better, and we don't always get it. What does that look like? What does making these decisions kind of look like for someone that wasn't as like light switch on like you were? Like, it sounded like you sat by the river or the lake or whatever, wherever body of water you went to.
Yep, Lake Erie.
On a rock. You sat on this rock, very like picturesque. You're like romanticized this decision making. And that very moment you were like, I'm done. But that doesn't happen for everyone. People live decades in regret and don't make decisions. So how do you coach somebody into making decisions that might impact everyone's lives, not just their own?
I'm going to say the hardest thing I think for us to do as humans is to actually stand in front of a mirror and look at yourself for more than 10 seconds.
Who's that girl?
Right?
I don't know who that is.
I mean, look at it.
Yeah.
And if you don't 100% love who you see in the life you have, then take, 2 hours of your time, get someplace where you have clarity, quiet, peace, and just write down your best day. What does it look like at home? What does it look like at work? Don't worry about making it neat or not messy. Just like scribble it all down, text it to yourself, whatever you want to do, and start there so you have some kind of goal to shoot for. And if that takes you, 2 weeks or 10 years to work towards, that's okay. That's up to you. But if you don't know where you're going, you're just never going to get there.
Or you think that you knew where you were going.
Or you think you knew.
And then you get to that place and you're like, cool, I don't think I ever really wanted to open a practice. It was the ambition and the parents that were hardworking that doctor, lawyer, or failure was like the concept. So you just do all of the right things. You marry the right person because you've been together for the longest time and it's the next sequential thing to do. You have the child, then you have another one because maybe that one will make you happy.
Yeah.
And then you never actually like have put together this vision board looks like.
That literally was me. I hope I'm the only person, but I knew the day I got married the first time, I'm like, I should not be walking down the aisle.
that moment.
I knew it. And it wasn't that I didn't like have love for her. We grew up together, but we were more best friends than we were people who should be married and spending a lifetime together. And I think most of us deep down, if we can look in the mirror for more than 30 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know what makes you happy and what doesn't. And then you just have to be honest with yourself. And some people will need to baby step. That's okay. Some people are sprinters. That's okay. Yeah. But if you know, take a step. Find people who help you take the steps.
You do that? How much are those services? Are you taking on new clients?
Yes. Yes, we do. I'll tell you, in the last 2 years, we've helped 6 dentists leave private practice for this very reason.
I thought you were going to say leave their wives.
No.
We've helped 12 dentists leave their wives.
We have 12 dentists leave.
4 hygienists find love.
We're not marriage counselors, but I'll tell you, I mean, you know, because you've had this, like people reach out to you all the time. I've had some really deep conversations with people I've never
Strangers.
Met.
Yeah.
But sometimes like when you feel, whether you know somebody or not, I think when you feel like this moment, you might be able to help them like this much.
Yeah.
I've had like 45, 50 minute conversations with crying men, women about like my life is awful. And I just try to, I'm like, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So I just try to listen and then say, you have to find somebody you can talk to about this.
A trained professional.
You have to go talk to somebody.
There's that fine line between like needing professional help and having a mentor.
Yeah.
And I sent you a photo. So when I read your book, I go off the grid every once in a while. For someone that is on social media a lot, who makes a business out of social media, I don't need balance. I need complete contrast.
Yeah.
I need woods. I need water. I need no makeup. And so when you sent me your book, I brought it with me and I was like, I don't know if I'll read it here. Like I try not to read business stuff when I'm like in my SOS mode, I call it.
Yeah.
And so I was also off Instagram at the same time. Like I did this weird thing where I got AI in my practice. I got an AI software that evaluates radiographs. So Instagram decided to blow me up over it. And like all of these dentists were coming at me in my DMs and saying hurtful things. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to shut down Instagram for 2 days. I'll come back when I'm ready. And then your book came in the mail. And I was also packing for this like forest trip. So I sent you a photo of me reading that section about mentorship because as someone on social media who seemingly appears to have everything figured out, people come to you for life advice.
Yeah.
I want to do this. I want to be this person. I want to do what you do, but it's not always what it seems, right? Five minutes ago, a dentist told me that I was an idiot for getting AI in my practice and that I'm going to ruin dentistry. And now this seemingly lovely young woman wants to be me. Like, how do you even, where's the moment? I sent you a photo of the section where you said, if you want a mentor, you need to come prepared. And that spoke to me a lot because nobody really comes prepared with what's in it for you and then also what's in it for them. Tell me some of the best prepared people that have come to you, aside from me, of course, with asking for your support as a mentor. And what does that relationship look like?
Yeah. So some of the best people have been, they don't necessarily have all the answers, but they've done some homework. Like they've invested time.
Yeah.
And I think when you come and you've already invested some kind of time to better your life for yourself, that shows me like, okay, if I give you a task or a series of tasks, you'll do them. And that for me is like the mentor-mentee thing. I will help you. But if you're not willing to help yourself, we're done.
Yeah.
And then so for me, I look at a lot of things I do very much like you. We mentor people all the time for free. And then there's another level where people say, you know what, David?
This is your regular thing.
This is really helpful. Like, how do I really get from here to here? And then we do that really two ways. One-on-one, we coach. Or sometimes we want on small group, but small group needs mean that you're okay digitally talking with a couple people at the same time. It's obviously a lot less expensive to do that. than one-on-one. Yeah. But I like people to be able to choose,
yeah,
you know, what they want for them, right? You get to do it your way.
Yeah. I worked with, I've had a few coaches, so paid coaches.
Yeah.
I have a hard time asking for mentorship because of my competitive nature.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone is in competition with me and everyone is going to take something away from me for whatever reason. That's just that I was the no sharing kid in school. Like, this is my book. These are my notes. No one can borrow them. A very big fault. But I've worked with a bunch of coaches who you pay. Like, you pay and every Tuesday at this time, and then you're given homework. And it's like piano lessons. If you don't do your homework, you're falling behind for the next coaching session. You never get to where you're supposed to go. And the most profound experience I had was with an organizational therapist in order for me to systemize things as a one person, one man show, one woman show. And she told me she couldn't work with me anymore. And she said, I have, you are at the capacity of what I'm able to teach you. You've done Wow. all of the things. You've followed through with all of the steps. This is where we end. And I felt like she was breaking up with me. I was like, what do you mean, Anita, that you're breaking up with me? Like, that's,
yeah,
I need more work. Like, there, she's like, this is to the best of my capabilities. I think
best coach ever.
You need to move on to a different coach now. And I was like, but who do I go to? Like, we've been working together for 8 months. She's like, and most people work with me for 2 or 3 years, but you've done in 8 months what someone else does in 2 and 3 years. We're done. And I was like, what do you mean you don't want my $20,000 a month? Like, really?
But don't
free
you
money.
Don't you love that person?
I do.
Yeah. Well, I did that. I had one of the practices we worked with in New Orleans. They were awesome. And so we got to a certain point. I'm like, okay, so you've done all the things you're willing to do. Now I know we're at a crossroad and I'm really pushing hard and you're not really willing to do those things. So it's time for us to just say, we're good.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what are you talking about?
You mean you're leaving?
Like, yeah. I'm like, well, I'm not dying. You didn't die. Like, we can still be friends, but I'm not a fan of consultants who you work with for like 15 years. If you haven't figured it out in the first 2 years, you're not going to figure it out.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So paying somebody for a decade or 20 years seems mindless.
Yeah.
But yet it happens all the time.
Yeah. She has a podcast and it's called How I Work. And she,
I'm gonna look her up.
She's really cool. She interviews CEOs of a variety of different companies, and she figures out how they work operationally. She breaks apart all of their structures and then comes up with like some pretty interesting concepts. So, like, listening to people's morning rituals, listening to their efficiency rituals, whether they do like time blocking or no time blocking, when you do your heavy thinking work. All of those like intricacies, if you obviously it's an expensive thing. I listened to the podcast for a very long time before I forked over the cash to pay for it. But I feel like I gained probably 30 or 40X on that investment in my practice because I was able to efficiently make people do the work that I am not able to do because I'm only there 2 days a week.
Yeah.
So I, like you, immediately went into an associate model right away where I only practice clinically 2, maybe 3 days a week if we have big restorative days, but that's it. And I wouldn't have been able to get to that had I not looked into coaching and had I not read all of the books, like The First 90 Days, Tools of Titans, I read constantly. Like, I always get something new. So you reference a lot of these writers in your book.
Yeah.
Some principles that I've forgotten about too. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember I read that book that one time and this section now makes more sense to me than it did the first time I read it 5 years ago or 6 years ago.
Yeah. Sometimes I just think it's not that we don't understand all the concepts. We're just maybe not at a point in our life where we're ready for it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, now I can turn that switch on.
Yeah. Any closing remarks? Any thoughts that I didn't touch on? I feel like I did good.
I think you did great. I appreciate that you not only read it, but like you read it.
There's a lot of notes in here. Like, last thing. You said you're a big fan of looking at the big picture and looking at assessing progress. And you identified that you need to assess your career, your lifestyle, and your relationship and set goals for each one of them. So my little sticky note is, can you actually have them all? And can you have them all at the same time?
Yes. You can have it all.
Why?
You can. You just have to start at home.
show of hands, who here believes that you can have your life, your career, and your relationships all in like a good place all at the same time? I am doing something wrong.
You are not. You're just you're your harshest critic. I mean, who do you think you can fake
it? It's over. We're done.
Like, the flip side is what scares me, right? People who think you could be unhappy over here and not let it trickle over, because I have some friends who are standing not too far from us right now, and they can attest.
Oh.
Like, when I was not the happiest
Show me your faces.
Soldier, I could only fake it so much before it just came out. And at that point, I was not the best boss. I was not the best coworker. I was not the best friend. And all those people deserve better for me. So, like, this is like 20 years of getting there, right? So if that's the take home, is none of this happens overnight. At least it didn't for me. But if you work at it, if you prioritize yourself, the people who you really care about in your life, you can have all three.
Thank you.
You got it.
You did good.
Thanks for hanging.
Thank you.
Thanks for
staying. All right, everyone. Check out the show notes for all of the details. And until next time, peace out, peeps. Bye.
Oh, hi. So you made it all the way to the end. Thank you for sticking around. And I hope you enjoyed this episode, found it informative, entertaining, and of course, as per usual, find me hilarious. If you liked what you heard, it would really mean a lot to me if you could show your support by liking, commenting, or sharing this episode with a friend or family member. Your feedback and engagement helped me get on the mic today, and it would also improve our future shows and reach more people who maybe could benefit from our content as well. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to my podcast on your favorite platform or on YouTube. Follow along on this crazy journey with me at toothlife.irene and at toothordare.podcast on Instagram and Twitter. That way you'll be the first to know when episodes are released and you won't miss a beat. I appreciate your support and look forward to bringing you more great episodes in the future. From my team to yours, thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the flip side.